Greetings. I'm Austin Egbert, the director of Mind Matters with Robert J. Marks. Welcome to this Mind Matters Bingecast, where a number of Mind Matters episodes are glued together into a single broadcast. Today's Mind Matters Bingecast features an intriguing chat with Will Fullerton about Bitcoin and blockchain. Enjoy.
What are blockchains? Bitcoin uses them. How will they transform various industries, such as financial services and title companies? That's the topic today on Mind Matters.
Welcome to Mind Matters, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. Trust is something which is a part of everything we do. I think that the big classic story is of the used car salesman, where you go in, you don't know whether to trust the guy or not. So therefore, you establish a greater degree of trust by going to Carfax and things of that sort. We also have trust in our banking transactions. When we put our money in the bank, we're trusting that that bank is going to keep our money and give it back to us when we want it. My daughter is in the real estate business, and one of the big businesses there is title insurance, wherein one goes back and looks at the history of real estate and hopefully establishes some sort of trust in the chain of ownership and liens and things of that sort. But you know, you can't always be 100% certain, so that's the reason that you have title insurance. One of the new technologies that is going to address trust is the blockchain. Blockchain, for example, is one of the things that makes Bitcoin work. And today to talk about it is our guest, Will Fullerton. He's a student of economics at TCU with an interest in Asian studies and Chinese, and he will soon be traveling to China to build blockchain businesses. Will, why China?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. And first off, thanks for having me on. The reason to think about China is really to think how China is investing in technologies such as artificial intelligence, machine learning, and even technologies like blockchain on a massive scale.
Didn't they announce like a multi-billion-dollar program in AI or something of that sort?
Absolutely. And that is just one reason to think about China and the future of these technologies, because as the Chinese R&D really takes off, we're going to start to see the number of patents and the number of Chinese-owned technologies having a rise.
I see. What are some of the businesses that are going to be affected and disrupted by blockchains? I think I mentioned banks and title companies, but this is going to be relatively widespread, isn't it?
Absolutely. Blockchain is not just a disruptive technology, it's a foundational technology. What does that mean? It means that blockchain, being a shared and immutable ledger of value, is going to allow us to create an internet of value, allowing us to create, transact, receive, and send all sorts of different digital assets. Anything from music to money could be disrupted.
My goodness. Can you explain, simply as you possibly can, what a blockchain is?
Absolutely. So a blockchain is a decentralized or shared ledger of information. So we already have ledgers in our centralized world, but the thing is that a lot of these ledgers are not shared. So there can be discrepancies between the two, and it can be very cost inefficient moving assets across networks.
Well, let me try to boil it down a little bit to more of a specific. We talked about title companies. Imagine a blockchain of transactions and real estate sort of history. You said it's decentralized. So one of the things is that this decentralization would be a software agglomeration that is actually shared by numerous different title companies. And they have to trust in each other for a specific reason. They have to trust that the blockchain that they have is right and is accurate. Now, how can that be assured?
Absolutely. So the thing about blockchain that creates this assurance is that when a new node is created or a new block is created, it has to be verified by the participants in the network.
And these participants can be numerous, because numerous people have copies of this blockchain sitting on their computer, or they have access to it. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And so I think it's important to note that these blockchains don't just live on one central unit or one central computer. They live across the network. So the way that they are insured and trusted is that every single piece of a transaction is connected to the preceding piece of the transaction.
Hence the idea of a chain, right?
Exactly. Hence the idea of the chain. And the block just being whatever the transaction is with a block of data, whether that's a timestamp or that's party A, party B, asset was transferred at this time to this person. It's just a series of information that's chained together to make a blockchain.
So how do I know somebody can't come in and violate my trust and alter this blockchain?
That's a really good question, and this is one of the big reasons that blockchains are such a foundational technology, is because they live on so many different devices. You would need massive amounts of computing power to change the information not only on your device, but on more than 51% of the devices in the network. For obvious reasons, that might be cost inefficient, because the amount of electricity and cryptography that you would have to use to hack into the network.
Well, that's the other thing, too. These links in the chain do not necessarily have to be transparent. They can actually be encrypted. So you could be a part of a chain wherein your contribution is encrypted and everything else is encrypted, and the blockchain is still safe, even though everything is encrypted. Is that right?
Absolutely. This is important because encryption is already a part of a lot of the transactions that we participate in, whether it's the online e-commerce transactions or when we go online and have encrypted keys or whatever it may be. But what the blockchain does is it uses encryption on every single step of the way. So it's just using encryption in a more massive scale, securing your information.
Interesting. So if you were a prophet, what are some of the things that you would think that blockchain would affect? How do you think it's going to affect, for example, banking and our banking abilities? Where right now we have to trust the bank.
Right. The way that I think that blockchain is going to change the world is you really have to think about how the world has been interacting for centuries. We've been talking about the trust protocol and how we need to establish trust between two parties. Traditionally, we have relied on financial institutions, whether that be Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, Visa, to just name a few. We have essentially trusted or entrusted them to be the arbiters of our money or information, saying person A has X amount of dollars and person B does not or whatever. And so they come in and they make the transaction possible. But what they are doing is they're taking a large piece of profit off of each transaction. And they're also delaying the transaction from happening in a much quicker and efficient manner. So blockchains actually take the middleman out of it and allow us to transact with each other and create value and receive value across a range of different platforms.
What is the status of the implementation of blockchain? I would imagine there's some startups which are happening that use blockchains and are trying to get some sort of traction in the market. Are you aware of any of these?
Absolutely. So there is a lot of action happening in the blockchain space right now. For the past couple years, it has gone from a buzz to a research and development, and to now a more implementation stage. We're starting to see ICOs, or initial coin offerings, of blockchain startups where they're receiving money by raising investment through cryptocurrencies. So things like Ethereum and all sorts of different platforms are starting to implement blockchain technologies. But I would say if the biggest of all of them is what IBM is doing with the blockchain.
What are they doing?
The IBM blockchain, I think they're working on more than 100 projects right now.
Oh my goodness.
They're implementing blockchains across supply chains, healthcare data. They're implementing blockchains all across business networks where there's any digital asset in question.
Now, it turns out the blockchains themselves can be linked to other blockchains to make a bigger blockchain. Is that right?
Absolutely. That is true. So these different blockchains can they're learning how to make them communicate with each other, because with a decentralized system, they're able to share information in a similar way that a relational database would.
As these blockchains get larger and larger, for example, with Bitcoin, as new transactions are added and added and added, the overall ledger for all of the history of the of blockchains, all of these links which are linked together, is going to become larger and larger and larger, and eventually not going to be able to fit on a computer. Is there a problem with that?
Absolutely. That has actually been one of the biggest problems that blockchain enthusiasts have faced, is the question of scalability. If you're thinking about in a traditional sense of like how many transactions that a Visa or a clearinghouse clears per second, they're in the thousands. Then you think about how many transactions PayPal clears. I mean, it's in the hundreds. And then, you know, Ethereum, you're starting to get into the 20s, and Bitcoin is only about 7 transactions
per
second.
Could you explain Ethereum? I'm not sure what that is.
Right. So Ethereum is another decentralized blockchain platform. But what their claim to fame is the smart contract, which is going to be one of the biggest killer apps of the blockchain. It's essentially taking a written out contract and turning it into computerized obligations. So blockchains and smart contracts will definitely change the way business is done.
Okay, so let's get back to the question then, the scalability and how big, for example, the blockchain for Bitcoin is. I have heard terms of like it's only like a few gigabytes right now.
I've heard similar things. I've heard that by 2017 of December, it reached around 149 gigabytes in size. So it's been growing since its creation, and the question of how we're going to be able to scale the blockchain and the Bitcoin blockchain, or any blockchains for that instance, is front center stage of the problems behind blockchain.
I see. What about latency? It seems like if there's a transactions in a blockchain and you add on to it, there's going to be a certain amount of time which is required to update everybody else's blockchain. And so that's going to put a damper on how quick you can do the transactions.
The problem of latency is right there with scalability, is because as these transactions get bigger and bigger and bigger, it's going to cause people to wait longer and longer and longer. And so that's where some of the computing is probably going to have to be offset to some of the larger cloud platforms. So IBM is talking about private clouds and different things. So maybe some of the blockchain would have to be put off device and just be able to access it from your iPhone or from your computer.
That is fascinating. Could you elaborate, last question, could you elaborate a little bit more on this contractual sort of blockchain that you were talking about? Why is it going to be so big, and why should I care?
Right. The reason why you should care is that the smart contracts take a lot of the different things that we see in daily life. Business contracts, for instance, are just obligations for two parties to meet with some sort of payment to be released. What the smart contract does allow is for you to enter into a smart contract with a person that you do not know, for you to set aside some form of obligation and pair two different bank accounts. So one case use for a smart contract could be you at your house have some kind of Wi-Fi. Well, you could charge people per use of your Wi-Fi by allowing people to enter into a smart contract agreement with you. They could walk into your house and turn the Wi-Fi on, and all of a sudden a smart contract would pair you to and would charge a person in micropayments for every megabyte or gigabyte that they use of your data.
I see. So therefore, this would allow you to go into contracts with people you don't know and have trust in them, in a sense.
Absolutely. And it allows you to really participate in the global sharing economy in a way that we find with companies like Uber and Airbnb, where two parties come together and they share resources or allow each other to use each other's resources, whether it's a car, whether it's an empty bedroom. But today we're relying on intermediaries like Uber and Airbnb to process these payments and establish trust between us. The blockchain could do that for us.
Interesting. I said I had one more question, but I lied. I have an additional one. You know, these Facebook contracts or these Google contracts where you go in and there's all sorts of these things that you have to agree to, and it goes page after page after page, and you click on that. Will those ever go into a blockchain?
So that's a really good question, because blockchains have actually been proposed to be able to allow us to take control over our data. They could be used as a sort of data black box that captures all of our data and allows us to send out the vital information for payment to companies like Google or Facebook. So Google and Facebook owning a lot of the data we create on their platforms could actually be given back to us. And if they wanted to use that data for advertisement, they would have to pay us for that said data.
Okay. I've been hesitating about putting stuff on the web, but now that I know that I might get paid for it, maybe I'll just start putting a bunch of things on the web and start posting on Facebook a little more often. Well, hey, thank you for the talk. I think we're running out of time, and we appreciate you talking about blockchains on this episode of Mind Matters. So until next time, be of good cheer. Greetings. Everybody seems to have heard about Bitcoin, but few people really have an understanding of how it works, what it is, and why people are going crazy about it, why a Bitcoin dollar is all of a sudden ballooned to $9,000 a Bitcoin. It's just amazing, and it's incredible. What is going on here? We had a previous broadcast with Will Fullerton, who is an expert in blockchains and cryptocurrency and Bitcoins and such, about blockchains. One of the places that blockchains have been really popularized is in the area of Bitcoin, and it's a different type of trust in currency. And people say, why would you trust in Bitcoin? Well, in the United States, we trust in the United States government to back our currency. Well, are we trusting in Bitcoin to back its currency? In a way, yes, and it's because of blockchains. So our guest is Will Fullerton. Will is a student of economics at TCU with an interest in Asian studies and Chinese, and he will be traveling soon to China to build blockchain businesses. Will one of these will be a blockchain business in cryptocurrencies?
Well, it's interesting because a part of this whole Bitcoin phenomenon is the fact that we are now able to receive funding from all sorts of different people. We've seen the funding come in the form of initial coin offerings. This could be related to what these stock exchanges have offered in the past as an initial public offering. So cryptocurrencies have been a valuable part of the blockchain process because it allows people to buy in to an idea to build these blockchain businesses.
Well, so basically, could you explain as simply as you possibly can, what is Bitcoin as a cryptocurrency?
So Bitcoin is notable because in 2008, there was an unknown person under the alias of Satoshi Nakamoto who released the Bitcoin blockchain white paper.
Has anybody done a research on this and tried to figure out where and who is Satoshi Nakamoto?
Absolutely. And there has been some claims of who this person is. But of course, with this alias figure, no one really knows.
I've also heard that whoever this creator is kept a bunch of bitcoins for him or herself and is now a pretty rich person.
You can only imagine so. As Bitcoin has gone up in price, so is their net worth. But Bitcoin has a lot of value because of its underlying technology, blockchain.
Okay, so there are two aspects of Bitcoin, as I understand it, and cryptocurrencies in general. One is the mining of the Bitcoin, and then once it is mined, it can be traded and used like currency. And my understanding is that the mining of Bitcoin is kind of like the mining of gold. Initially, it was really easy, but as the gold resources began to get depleted, that it became harder and harder and harder to mine Bitcoin. Are people still mining Bitcoin?
Yes, they are still mining Bitcoin. And you're exactly right. At the beginning, it was very easy to mine Bitcoin because of the number of transactions that it needed to verify, or the miners needed to verify. When it was at the beginning, or the advent, it was there was relatively few Bitcoin transactions. As we've come into 2018, we've started to see lots of different participants. And so each preceding transaction is always bigger, and it's always harder to mine.
I have actually heard that in order to mine Bitcoin today, that the amount of electricity you would need for your computer would actually exceed that of the Bitcoin that you mined. Is there any truth to that?
That is the absolute truth. And this is where people are starting to figure out different ways to mine Bitcoin in a more profitable way, whether that's to be going to places where they have free electricity or subsidized by the government, or, you know, go to cold places where the cooling cost is actually less.
Are you serious? They're actually thinking of going to like Siberia to set up a supercomputer to mine Bitcoin because the environment can absorb the heat?
Absolutely. Anything to give you a competitive edge in the 21st century of...
That is hilarious. So why does Bitcoin work? We've touched on it a little bit. We have the mining of cryptocurrency. We have the idea of blockchains, et cetera. But why does it work?
Right. So Bitcoin relies on a range of participants to establish the trust and to verify the transactions.
One of the questions I have is, how many people are actually sharing this ledger of Bitcoin? There must be a bunch of duplications of the ledger of Bitcoin all around the world. And do we have any idea how many there are in that duplication?
So due to Bitcoin's pseudo-anonymous nature, which means that a part of the information that is put on Bitcoin is anonymous. Part of it, something you can see. It's really hard to estimate how many users there are, but some have noted that there might be less likely than 30 million, and definitely over 13 million users. But it is really hard to track.
Oh my goodness. Is it hard or easy to buy and sell Bitcoin? How easy
well,
is
it's
it?
It is actually pretty easy to buy and sell Bitcoin. There's a number of exchanges that allow you to buy and sell Bitcoin, whether that's, you know, Bitfinance, Coinbase, Poloniex, just to name a few.
These are websites, is that right?
They are. They're Bitcoin platforms that allow you to buy and sell cryptocurrencies, and sometimes they even pair it with a Bitcoin wallet.
Okay, and let's talk about Bitcoin wallets. Before Bitcoin wallets, what are the name of some of these sites where you can learn more about this?
Right. To learn more about how to buy and sell cryptocurrencies, it's best to go to some of these exchange websites. Whether it's Coinbase, Poloniex, or Bitfinance, but
would that be like Bitfinance.com or something like that?
Right. So the best places to go would CoinDesk.com or Bitcoin.org. So all of these different websites, they have similar information, but really their twist is, you know, what kind of platform they offer.
I see. And you were talking about a Bitcoin wallet. What's a Bitcoin wallet?
Well, a Bitcoin wallet is essentially an encrypted digital wallet that allows you to store, again, digital assets. So with a Bitcoin wallet, you're given a public and private key. Sometimes this comes in the form of like a QR code where you can show people QR code.
QR, what does QR stand for? Do you know?
Well, a QR code is similar to a two-dimensional barcode, but it differs because it consists of basically black squares arranged in a square grid, which can be read by imaging devices or other data processing devices that basically allow us to extract the public key so that we can send and receive cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin.
I see. I think everybody has probably seen these QR little blocks that look like just random splotches of black and white that you can take pictures of and do things. So that's QR, which stands for?
Quick Response Code.
Okay. So I it's easy to buy and sell Bitcoin. I can have myself a Bitcoin wallet. And that is kind of cool. Bitcoin is one of the most popular cryptocurrencies. There are other cryptocurrencies also. Is that right?
That is true. There is a lot of cryptocurrencies in the space right now. And honestly, they've just skyrocketed since about 2017. They have been growing from hundreds to thousands in a short amount of time.
What determines the value of a cryptocurrency? Clearly, it's supply and demand, but how do these companies establish that?
Right. So the biggest way that people have been supplying these cryptocurrencies is they've been building these ICOs on the Ethereum platform.
What are ICOs and how are they offered?
Right. So an ICO is an initial coin offering. And it's essentially used by startups so that they can bypass some of the financial intermediaries that have offered similar IPOs in the past. So the initial public offerings that investment banks have offered in the past are now allowed by startups to build these companies that can receive fundings from anybody who receives or buys their cryptocurrency.
Okay, here's a big question, and this is a little bit of self-interest. Could you and I start a cryptocurrency and get rich, and maybe I could promote our cryptocurrency on our podcast here? What keeps us from starting our own cryptocurrency? We could, couldn't we?
We absolutely could, and it's actually I would say it's relatively easy with the Ethereum application. We could start our own cryptocurrency and people could participate in an ICO where they buy our coins.
Oh my goodness. But it seems like that if everybody is doing this, pretty soon nobody's going to care about a new ICO.
Right. And that is some of the problem that we're seeing in the ICO space today. How much of these ICOs are actually worth anything? We really don't know. We could relate this a lot to the dot-com bust, right, where everybody said, if it's on the internet, it will sell. If it's on the internet, you know, we'll raise funding. And just like the ICO has seen its boom, there will inevitably be some form of bust.
Okay. So it's all going to be controlled by the free market, isn't it, eventually?
Of course. Okay. Just like anything, there's going to be optimists and there's going to be pessimists. And to quote Warren Buffett, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful.
Okay. I love that saying, by the way. That is really, really kind of cool. One of the things about our current economy and the way money is moved, like the U.S. dollar today, is that a history is left as money moves from place to place. The only way to get around that now is if you do totally transactions and cash. Is it true that cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin can move from owner to owner without leaving such a trail?
Well, it's a yes and no answer, because there are aspects that are pseudo-anonymous, but still a part of the blockchain is that every single transaction is recorded and linked to each other. So we think of this as the problem of the Internet of Information was that we were creating duplicates of whether it was a PowerPoint or a PDF, and that was good for information but was really bad for money. So what needed to happen was a way to store and link these transactions so that when I send you money, I no longer have access to that money. So blockchain solves this problem by linking the transactions, but also offers some sort of anonymity that allows us to be hidden from the public eye.
So everybody always asks about the IRS. It's clear that if I buy Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency at a low price, and then later I sell it for a high price, I've made a profit that is taxable under the U.S. tax code. I can see the IRS moving in with legislation which actually requires the compromise of this anonymity that you have in blockchain. Is that going to happen?
Absolutely. Well, some of the big questions behind Bitcoin is also how the IRS is going to be dealing with the capital gains or the property ownership. So some of the things that they've already put forth is that you're going to have to be putting this Bitcoin on your taxes as property ownership. Some of the capital gains that you've received, you're going to have to state in a similar way that you would state stock gains or bond gains or whatever that may be.
So do you think that there will ever come to a point where Bitcoin is going to submit a 1099 to the IRS?
Yeah, of course. Well, some of the problems around Bitcoin would be how the IRS or other government agencies are going to regulate or restrict Bitcoin or blockchains. And some of the value that is a part of Bitcoin is the fact that it's decentralized and secure from these outside sources. So any kind of restriction on that could take away from its underlying value.
Gotcha. The way things are now, with IRS notwithstanding, it looks like the cryptocurrency could be used like for drug transactions. I mean, in bad sort of senses, with a degree of anonymity. But it could also be used by people like me that want the government out of their business and would like to do transactions without other people knowing about it. So it seems that there's both a good and a bad part of cryptocurrency. Would you agree with that?
Well, of course. I think that we could actually say that in regards to all technologies and a lot of the money that we see today. Technologies can be used for either good or evil, and it's really up to the individual of how it is used. We could see how technology has been used to connect the world. But also technology has been used by terrorist organizations to fund their operations. So Bitcoin does allow the anonymity that allows us to transact with each other. But unfortunately, the other side of the coin is it allows some of the underground world to be able to transact too.
Excellent. One final remark. My last name is Marks, and your last name is Fullerton. So I have an idea for our Bitcoin. Mark used to be a monetary unit for the Germans. And so we could call ours Fuller Mark. What do you think, since your last name is Fullerton?
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Okay, and, well, let's talk offline.
Absolutely. Okay. Of course.
Will Fullerton, thank you so much for talking to us today on Mind Matters. And till next time, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.